Welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. Data suggests that retail crime, particularly shoplifting, has increased in the United States since the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2023, the National Retail Federation reported a 93% increase in the average number of shoplifting incidents compared to 4 years earlier. Organized retail crime has also shown an upward trend. That's a specific type of criminal activity where coordinated groups steal merchandise specifically to resell it for cash. Also, data strongly indicates that shoplifters and retail thieves have become more aggressive and violent since the pandemic. Retailers say many employees report that they don't feel safe at work. As a criminologist and director of the Loss Prevention Research Council, Dr. Reed Hayes with the University of Florida has been working alongside retailers and the police and studying these trends. He says location technology is central to understanding them.
Crime in place are really probably the most critical and important way to look at reducing crime and trying to understand how is this happening, who's coming here, where are they coming from, how are they getting there. So that's how we're looking very holistically and comprehensively, hopefully, at crime and loss to get a better handle on it.
Dr. Reed Hayes tells Esri's Karen Sullivan how Geographic Information System, or GIS technology, is helping to address crime in the retail industry.
Reed, good morning and welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast.
Well, good morning to you, Karen.
You're working with retailers of various sizes, some of them very large. In those cases, does the retailer need to take kind of a system-wide or an enterprise approach to crime prevention?
We believe they should. That's kind of where we are right now. Now, a lot of them will do it with merchandise. We could say, okay, I don't have a map or anything here, but I am seeing with my data that losses are clustered in, say, three departments, electronics, health and beauty care, and then maybe they have another one depending on who they are. And then, here's how many incidents that we're aware of by type and by store. And so now on a national scale, they can look in the aggregate at themselves, and then they don't necessarily know who else is there, but they can see across the country, wow, these are some real hotspots.
And one technology that you're using to better understand and track crime is Geographic Information Systems, also known as GIS. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. So we're working in Gainesville, Florida as one big living lab, right? We work with all the retailers, all the law enforcement agencies and beyond to create a safer ecoscape, but do R&D to get better and better. And we try and translate that to other places, Atlanta, Miami, Port St. Lucie, Albuquerque, Los Angeles, New York City, and so on, just to name a few. And so the first thing we do is work with Esri, and we then work with the retailers. We work with the law enforcement agencies to have a common operational picture. Think of a big map saying, okay, here's where crime and place are co-located. Here seem to be patterns. Here's where the people that are the large high-impact offenders, who they're connected with, how they're creating these dangerous conditions, so that we now have risky places and risky people that are interacting with them. And so we use these GIS systems all day, every day to understand problems, to try and address them proactively, to handle in the heat of the moment. If there's an armed robbery in progress, if there's an active shooter, if there's a large looting event like we saw in the 2020-21 time period and then beyond at Philadelphia and other places, everybody can work together. They have a much better insight into what's going on. And then retroactively as well as part of putting together cases that the police detectives and the prosecutors can say, okay, here are all the places that this individual has victimized. Here's the crew that's victimizing, and here's where they are. Here's how we can, you know, all these sorts of things.
Location is central to understanding a store's safety. So a retailer may want to close specific locations, but that can also hurt a community and ultimately a store's brand. So how does data help with decisions over closing stores or keeping them open?
I'll give you a quick example. We met with a group of leaders in the community and the Chamber of Commerce and others to say, okay, the mayor, the commission, not just the law enforcement agencies and the retailers, okay, here's what the picture looks like. Here's some of the dynamics. What are your thoughts? And I can remember the first time we had a meeting with them and there was a pause. And then every single person, even in the mayor's office, were saying, okay, I can see, wow, we can't go everywhere and do everything. We need to be very clustered where the problem is because we have limited resources. And this is allowing us to be very precise, to pinpoint issues, to understand, and then apply in a more precise way. My father and grandfather, being physicians, they leveraged, you know, imagery all the time on top of, you know, blood tests and everything else for their diagnostics, right? They do a very complete differential diagnosis to allow for a much more precise treatment that should be more impactful and should result in fewer negative side effects, right? So we do the same thing here. So now everybody can get an idea of what's going on, or a better idea anyway, and then now come up with some plans that are evidence-based. And I think that's the big play that we've got.
So Reed, tell us a bit about why retail crime is increasing.
Well, I think, you know, we don't know. There seems to be some relationship to the COVID-19 crisis that the entire globe experienced. Retailing, like every place else, changed, and probably forever. More technology was adopted. We lost a lot of stores and retailers and employees. You know, there were a whole lot of negative effects on top of the health effects. But people had to re-socialize. And so it seemed like there was much more aggression being reported and violence over some of the simplest things, you know, buy online, pick up at a store, and who parks in what spot at self-checkout and things like that, where people were rubbing up against each other, maybe weren't used to it or whatever it was after a while of being sort of isolated. But you saw those types of effects. And it's probably a lot of factors going on. Inflation has gone up. And I think that also explains a little bit of the variance between then and now and whatever's to come. Another factor that helps explain some variance, and that is it's much easier today to convert stolen goods to cash than ever on these online platforms. Even many, many retailers have their own online selling platforms that are massive. And so an illicit seller can hide up in there, even though there's a new federal statute that came out a couple of years ago, Inform Act, other ways to try and clamp down. But detection is so difficult, but it's just so easy now. You don't have to go to a flea market or expose yourself in some back alley to being victimized yourself or not getting much money. You could return to the retailer and convert it to cash. You can go on many, many selling websites.
This type of organized crime affects people working in stores, and the National Federation of Retailers has reported that retail workers are seeing more violence by shoplifters. Is safety a bigger concern today?
Absolutely. But I can also tell you, in our conversations with the vice presidents of these 100 plus corporations, they and their C-suite managers, the executives there, are also very, very concerned about the safety, the danger, but also the stress that can come from that. So you've probably noted in the media that numerous chains have retreated from places like Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, San Francisco, California, LA, Chicago, we could go on. They've closed stores, sometimes as many as a dozen or more in that market, and sometimes as many as two dozen retailers have retreated from a particular market, and that's really because of crime, loss. In fact, some cases, the retailer was spending more on securing or protecting that store than the overall margin. And food retailers have some of the slimmest margins of any business out there. In other words, they might make 2-3% pre-tax profit at the end of the year. And that means that they are taxed on the profit that they've got. So they may not have a whole lot left over.
That makes sense. I think grocery stores are often the types of businesses that we think of as leaving a neighborhood.
Absolutely. So when we look at those types of businesses and those communities and those neighborhoods, right, we go down even to the block or block segment, even a part of a block on a street, and understand dynamics, the crime that occurs, but the impacts of crime events. You know, we're talking about somebody harming another person, right? They're including stealing their stuff. So that's where the effects can ripple out of a single crime event, much less a series of ongoing thefts, or include now roll-in robberies that are very dangerous and very scary. Look at burglaries that are overnight, where in some cases, particularly let's look at dollar and convenience and other stores, they make their biggest cost from a crime like a burglary because the damage, the broken glass and doors and other damage, may be more costly for that store than the loss of the merchandise, but you're looking at both.
To understand retail crimes more deeply, you've been looking beyond just the store where a crime happens. What are you learning about the nature of retail crimes?
What we started doing, really going back a quarter century now, which sounds long time and it is, but is each crime event, each time one person victimizes another, including their place, is the result of that offender. That offender making a series of selfish choices or decisions to move through place and time. It may be in minutes or seconds, but it may be over months, to go there and harm somebody else, to steal from them, threaten them, or worse. And so because of that journey, just like a customer journey to come shop, that's important to understand. Why do they want that particular product? Why do they choose a particular store to go purchase that product, something they want or something they really need? We do the same with crime journeys and understanding that. And so overwhelmingly, offenders don't live at that place. Now, if we were looking at crime and apartments and residential areas, now they do. But in this case, they're having to travel there. So we need to understand the environment, the near environment, that parking area, what buildings and people and dynamics are occurring around that place, all the way out to the edge of the community at least. So we work in and out from inside the space all the way to the edge of that community and back inward, is how we're looking at crime and place. Because crime and place are really probably the most critical an important way to look at reducing crime and trying to understand how is this happening? Who's coming here? Where are they coming from? How are they getting there? How are they getting away? What do the escape routes look like? What businesses, what other structures are co-located with them? Is there mass transit stops that can facilitate moving crime in and out of a particular place and so on? So that's how we're looking very holistically and comprehensively, hopefully, at crime and loss to get a better handle on it.
And you talk about these incidents in terms of being organized attacks or organized crimes. What does this mean in today's retail marketplace?
I think it does mean a lot. And so we do. We look at organized retail crime. We look at the coordination. They're not always organized, you can imagine, but they are coordinating to a certain extent. So think about before, let's say, a theft event where a group decides, you know, in the moment or over time, you know, that place has a lot of merchandise or some merchandise that we know how to convert to cash. We know how to make that turn into money. And so, you know, you'll see criminal groups that will not, let's say, attack a place that has clothing. They don't know how to turn that into cash, but they like electronics or consumer goods like razor blade packs, diapers, infant formula, you know, premium skincare, and so on. So they're going to go to that place that they think is best. So when we look at organized retail crime or coordination, it could be before the attack. It could be they're coordinating that a little bit. It could be during that actual theft event. One member might create a diversion in the store so that everybody looks that way while the other one is concealing and removing objects. You might say coordination after the crime event, right? Now, how do we this fence works with me. They know how to put this online or sell it in their store or distribute it elsewhere. But we have the clearance, us and our technology, to access and use the data. And so that's really what we're doing, is looking for patterns, clusters. And so on our dashboard, we have multiple layers. So we could say, well, let's look at all bus stops. Okay, let's look at the bus lines. Let's look at, all right, let's put on heat mapping and understand where these problems clustered. Okay, let's understand, why is it clustered here in place and time? There's a bus stop going northbound and southbound. Look over here just to the northwest. There's three abandoned buildings with all kind of calls for service there. Look to go back over to the east and just north of these two stores that have having a lot of problems. There's a large homeless encampment. When we look at, we can then put on journeys to crime. Wow, we see a whole lot of the people in that encampment are being victimized, but we see even more people coming out of that encampment are victimizing those close by and even more remote places across the community. And so now we're starting to understand dynamics. Where can you go in, get help? Who are these high impact offenders that need to be, cases should be made so we can put them in timeout or take them out of circulation, so reduce that victimization. So the dashboard just allows you to portray on there what you would like. And so they have the capability or can get that capability to do the analysis. We're here to teach people how to catch their own fish, because we cannot do crime analysis for all 19,000 law enforcement agencies or, you know, all 100 retailers we work with.
Law enforcement agencies may be used to working with other agencies and departments. How are you getting retailers that are highly competitive to work together?
I'm not aware of any group that works so closely and have really over the last 20 plus years. LPRC is set up with these working groups. We have six, one on supply chain protection, data analytics, but we also have retail fraud, store theft. We have violent crime and organized retail crime working groups, six of them. And you'll see anywhere from 10 to 80 retailers, separate retailers on there. They're very open. They're very sharing with what they've got going on. Now, they won't share what they sell, how much, what their cost of goods and profit margins, those sorts of things, where they're going next, how many stores are opening. But when it comes to preventing crime, they're very open. But what we're trying to do is inform those discussions. Don't just share what you're experiencing or even what you're doing about it. Do that. But what about leveraging these types of tactics so that you much better understand the problem and that your solutions are much more precise? But further, through our research, we're showing, look, you also should leverage research, evidence-based practice, like in medicine. You're not just doing stuff because the other guy did or just makes sense. That's part of it. Networking and benchmarking are good, but they're not great. You need evidence to inform. Now you can get to a little bit greater.
Reed, thank you so much for talking with us today to help us understand how crime is evolving in the retail world. It's very interesting. Thank you.
My pleasure. We're here to help, so reach out to us.
Thanks for listening to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast, and thanks to Dr. Reed Hayes. If you like this episode, please share it with a colleague.